This is a download from the Post Keynesian Economics Study Group, PKSG. For more information and terms of use, please visit www.postkeynesian.net.
Well, if I could now ask Murray Melgate to give us his thoughts in response.
Thanks, Mark. I have to say it was difficult when I read Christina's paper to be as optimistic as she was, given the current state of affairs in the macroeconomic debate. She said at the end, this looks like a pessimistic ending. If that's pessimistic, I think I'm going to be even more pessimistic than her view of where we are today. Early on in the paper, a point that Christina didn't mention in her presentation, she isolates Say's law as a crucial theoretical point of departure that Keynes makes from the existing economic orthodoxy of his day. And I think that's where the sort of fundamental theoretical further development needs to be made. And I'm all with her in terms of going forward to a real Keynes rather than some imagined Keynes that we should look to see the future. But I think at the moment, and here's where I'm pessimistic, that is something for the future. We're in a world now where I like to think or call where the lunatics have taken over the asylum. You know, we're not debating the finer points of either what Keynes really meant or what the deep theoretical underpinnings of various positions on economic policy are. We have before us, across the global system, politicians and advisors who believe that if you take care of the deficit and the public debt, growth and employment will take care of themselves. And that's the basic message of Say's law. And the opposite message is the one I think we need to be fighting the battlefront for now, which is that if you take care of growth and employment, the debt and the deficit will take care of themselves. So I'm more pessimistic than Christina, because I think we need to engage with that debate, which is the debate she suggests in some sense we can leave behind. This is not being critical of her, because the future she sees, I think, is in the long run, but there is some quote from Keynes about where we'll all be in the long run, and right now I think we should be with the people arguing for more sensible economic strategies to deal with the crises we face. Now, what do I mean by that? What do I mean by where those sensible strategies are? Well, I think I mean two things. First, I think that the entire thrust of the current debate has forgotten the role that financial liberalization of the global economy has played in bringing us to where we are today. The British Prime Minister likes to refer to the mess we are in being caused by the previous government. The mess we are in, I think, and all of what Christina's had to say today makes it very clear, is due to what has taken place in that financial sector over the last 25, 30 years, since the debates of the 70s and the triumph of those anti-Keynesian positions. And I find it remarkable that where we are today has left us without anything to say whatsoever on financial reform. I mean, if you look at the recent efforts at financial reform in the United States with the Dodd-Frank Act, and in Britain with the Vickers Commission report, in the States that act is currently being written in detail for legislative provision in the future. In the UK, the Vickers Commission recommendations are purportedly to be brought into action within the next decade. And if you look at both of those efforts to deal with financial reform, they amount, it seems to me, to one thing. That is that we will assume financial crises are part and parcel of the world we live in. And we will see if we can devise methods to allow us to survive. It's a bit like a surgeon or a medical practitioner agreeing that heart attacks are things we will all have, and we'll try to devise ways of surviving them. Now, that's a good strategy if we're in the middle of a heart attack. It's not such a good strategy for driving research forward. We need to find better ways to think about the problem we face. And so my take on the return to Keynes is that we need to get back to the nitty-gritty of what you might call pragmatic Keynesianism. In Christina's paper, she talks about hydraulic Keynesianism. which of course is a wonderful thing, because it emerges from almost all of these positions that she surveyed in her paper, whether it's Willem Bouter, whether it's the Dahlem Report, whether it's Krugman, whether it's Stiglitz, whether it's behavioral economists. They all come up with basically the same sort of form of practical macro policy at the level of debt and deficit. What they don't really do is address the financial reform issue. And so my sort of vision of the future for Keynesianism relies on us doing a lot of work in an area that Keynes himself did very little work in. His real contributions to the discussion of finance take place well before the general theory. It doesn't figure prominently in the general theory because the nature of the crisis he begins to face in the 1930s is not the financial crisis of the late 1920s in the United States. And so in terms of re-embracing Keynes, I think it's probably more important right now to re-embrace the pragmatic Keynesianism of the general theory rather than the kind of deeper theoretical issues which I think can be left to the future. Now, I say that somewhat advisedly since Mark mentioned a book that John Eatwell and I have recently published, which is regrettably titled The Fall and Rise of Keynesian Economics. Perhaps now it should be The Fall, The Rise, and The Fall Again of Keynesian Economics. But what that argument tries to do is redirect a Keynesian perspective into the issues of financial policy. And that's where these issues that Christina mentions about the role of risk and uncertainty, the role of convention and institutions, I think, becomes really crucial. Because it's in the role of institutions and the role of convention, risk and uncertainty that the methods of financial reform are to be found. And I don't think they'll be found in Keynes himself. I think it's work that needs to be done by us, by the younger people in this room who will hopefully be working away on these current problems, rather than leaving us with a kind of sour taste over this whole episode. That is, leaving us with the feeling that we're back to the 70s. We're just going to repeat what happened in the 70s with a fruitless debate about this is not what Keynesianism is, which we all had and we all participated in, at least I did, when we were worried about ISLM and aggregate supply and demand, and now we're worried about dynamic stochastic general equilibrium, I am as well. We're having debates which are not for the present. For the present, the debates are elsewhere. They're about securitization, they're about leverage in the financial system, they're about a thing called financial innovation, which gives us securitization, credit derivatives, CDOs, CDSs, all of the kind of, if you like, gambling chips that were laid on the table in the last 25 years to allow, essentially, investment to be set free of productive economic activity. What we've seen, I think, over these last 25, 30 years is the progressive burgeoning of investment activity taking place beyond the real economy. We've seen, if you like, a huge spiraling of investment activity, apparently productive, which has turned out to be unproductive. And we need to understand why that's been made possible. You know, and what we don't have, I think, at the moment is any firm grasp on why that has taken place. Christina suggests two things we should look at. I agree totally. Institutions and risk and uncertainty. That's where we need to look to get a grip on what's taken place. I think the other thing we need to do, I mentioned Say's Law as the kind of, for me, the key dividing point between the old-fashioned way of thinking about the macroeconomy and a more productive way of thinking about the macroeconomy. A corollary to Say's Law is the good old-fashioned classical dichotomy. We seem to be back with the classical dichotomy, and we don't really need sophisticated alternative theories to reject this proposition about the world. We just need some hard-nosed, pragmatic policies to, if you like, relieve the real economy of the burdens that financial liberalization has placed upon it. So, from where I come from, and again, I'm sort of treading on sort of difficult issues here, because I do believe in the importance of theoretical rethinking and the centrality of theoretical rethinking. I think that's for the future, not for now. And I would hope that in the discussion that follows Christina's paper, as well as discussing the leads that she's given us to the future, which I think are all the correct ones, we might be able also to talk about the more pragmatic measures that, and the more pragmatic debate that we need to have today to resolve the problems we face. I mean, each day I despair when I read the newspapers. Those of you who read the newspapers any longer, I've given up, by the way, because it makes me so upset. Though I did read Glenn Hubbard in today's Financial Times. Do you all know who Glenn Hubbard is?
He's a White House man.
Yeah, well, he was a White House man for the Republicans. He's now one of the advisors to Mitt Romney, the Republican candidate, or our Republican candidate.
What did he say today?
Sorry?
What did he say today?
Well, he outlined in the Financial Times an argument for what American economic policy should look like. And the economic policy for the U.S. recommended by Professor Hubbard. I should say, by the way, he's joint advisor to Mitt Romney with, I wonder who can guess who. Who knows who Mitt Romney's other economic advisor? Christina, you must keep quiet.
Rothbard.
No. Right institution, wrong person. Greg Mankiw. Is anyone surprised?
Yes.
Greg Mankiw. Well, basically the argument was a very familiar one. We need medium to long-term fiscal consolidation. So we need to, you know, reduce our spending. We need to bring this national debt down. We need to have that in focus. But we also need short-term stimulus. And the short-term stimulus should be broadening the tax base, which means, of course, eliminating all of those ridiculously high taxes on the wealthy and sort of shifting them back onto, dare I not, so I shouldn't say you and I, because I actually found out where I fall in the income distribution in the UK, and it was quite frightening, really. Maybe you often want to think I should argue for tax cuts. But basically broadening the tax base and moving taxes back onto the less well-off. Eliminating corporate tax, capital gains tax, inheritance tax, any other tax you might imagine on rentiers. And that was his suggestion for the future of America. And when this is the level of the debate we have, appearing as it does in the Financial Times, then, you know, I think it's time to enter the pragmatic debate, to join those people in their tents outside of St. Paul's down in the City of London or on Wall Street and really turn the sort of handle in their fire to get some reforms in the financial system, because that's where I think our problem today lies. If you look at Europe's pathetic attempts to deal with the sovereign debt crisis, then, you know, Keynesianism, in either its pragmatic or more theoretical form, has made no contribution to that debate. And that's where we need to be, I think. We need a lot of Christina's stuff, maybe down the track. And, you know, I think if we do that, if we talk about that, as well as the future road for theory, we'll be getting somewhere, because I fear this battle that we might be fighting may well be lost. And it may well be lost because, in just the same way it was lost in the 70s, that we gave up the practical debate in favor of the niceties of theory. And I'm not against the niceties of theory. Anyone who knows me knows I'm not against the niceties of theory. But I think we need to gauge where we are and what is strategically sensible at the moment. So our natural enemies, Joan Robinson declared those natural enemies to be bastard Keynesians back in the 60s. She was perfectly prepared to take on Paul Samuelson, Bob Solow, and the Keynesians advising the Kennedy administration, very progressive administration. And bingo, at the end of the decade, we lose the battle. You know, the 70s sees a transformation of the world back into something that sort of plea for deeper theoretical consideration failed to generate. And I think we're in danger of being there again. And I'm not innocent of this sort of charge. I mean, I too, in this book, focus on theoretical issues in a way which, in some sense, makes me wonder whether that was a tactically right way to move forward at present. I could talk more about the kinds of reforms I think are appropriate in the financial system and I'm happy to in discussion if you wish. But I think it'd be kind of nice to frame the discussion in terms of what is the current priority that we might wish to take. Is it to focus on exactly the kind of issues that Christina has isolated in her paper, to carry forward a proper theoretical rethink of macroeconomics? Is it to focus on what I've chosen to emphasize in these comments, the current pragmatic policy issues, and I've named them as two, financial reform and fiscal policy. They're the two things I think that are important. Or is it a combination of both? I kind of like to think it's a combination of both, because, you know, both of us have engaged in exactly both of those debates. But that, I think, is the way I'd like to suggest we might frame our discussion. What's the right balance in the circumstances we find ourselves today between satisfying ourselves with hydraulic Keynesianism, yeah, or being dissatisfied with that and getting on with doing some of the other stuff, or can we do both? Well, that's really all I wanted to say.
Well, thanks very much.